You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 24th, 2019. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where, repeat after me, The Professional Left is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful podcast I've ever known in my life. The Professional Left is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful podcast I've ever known in my life. It's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hi, Driftglass.
Hey, Blue Gal. Did you get the message about our podcast being the nicest, kindest, bravest, most wonderful podcast ever?
I understand that we here at the Professional Left podcast actually have an oval cornfield where everyone is supposed to stand around and recite how calm I am.
Calm.
And then talk about how I have the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful podcast ever.
Yes. I'm a stable genius myself.
in this oval cornfield of ours.
I'm a genius in the stable. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Yeah.
That was weird. That was definitely...
That was a repeat performance.
It was.
I've done that many times before. We're going to go around the table and you're all going to praise me, right? Yes, dearly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're going to do. And, you know, you expect members of a cabinet to support the person who appointed them to that position. I get that. But this creepy Saddam Hussein level, all right, now we're going to go around and loudly pledge your loyalty to me and tell me how wonderful I am for the cameras. It's just, you know, we are now two countries or three countries, mm-hmm. really. One country, we see this for what it is, a totalitarian racist thug, you know, fully exercising himself in his role that he's wanted his entire life as a mob boss who can boss people around, who can threaten them, who can take their shit away, who can humiliate them in public, who can exercise every creepy, awful, racist, narcissistic impulse in his body. That's us. Then there's the country in the country that love this shit, that love it. The Republicans love a totalitarian. They love a dictator. They have been waiting for this their whole life. Some lunatic right-wing nut job who will just order them around.
White male.
Yep. White male. A white male. Christian white male who will just, you know, who is their every dream come true. They want to be the guy who can hire a porn star and get away with it. They want to be the guy who can tell liberals to go shove it and with nuclear weapons and make friends with, you know, pal around with dictators. Republicans despise democracy. They hate it. They've hated it all their lives because it makes them do things they don't want to do. And then there's the third country, the country of, you know, the middle, who just want everyone to stop shouting and get along. Who just want everyone to just, I don't want to know who's right or wrong. It's a competition of partial truths, Blue Gal. And that's where we live now. And the only good thing I can say about the Trump administration, it has made the distinction between those three populations in this country crystal clear. You know where people stand now. They're either on the side of the angels, or they're on the side of Donald Trump, or they're quibbling, quizzling cowards in the middle. There's no other place to be. And our job on this podcast is to burn the middle down, to leave them no place to hide. Pick a fucking side.
Well, and let's be clear that the both siderists are always on the side of evil. It's not because we don't want peace. It's not because I would like to go through a day not having to think about how Donald Trump is destroying this country. I would love to have a day off from this. Sure. I mean, we all would. Sure. I'd like to be able to relax and feel that, okay, we can have peace for now. But if you are standing in a world, as we all are, where Donald Trump is the so-called president of the United States, he's demanding loyalty from his underlings in, as you say, Saddam Hussein style in the Oval Office. Uh-huh. And he's doing serious damage to our national security right now.
Yes, he is.
By releasing and declassifying only for his hand-selected attorney. Mm-hmm. For political purposes, to destroy his political enemies, classified information from other foreign governments who will never share classified information with us ever again.
Right.
The fact that all of that is happening and you're going to stand there and say, well, both sides do it. Both sides are equally bad. You are enabling Donald Trump by doing that. That is your purpose.
Yeah.
And there is no middle ground anymore. You are either with him or not. He's right. You're either with him or not. Yeah. But you can't be neutral in the culture wars anymore. You can't be neutral in whether or not Donald Trump remains in the White House. There's no neutrality involved here.
Well, and
he is a danger to the world.
And those of us who've seen it coming, you know, we're just sort of like, mm-hmm. okay, this is now we're here. We've arrived. Mm-hmm. But really, the culture war, which has been going on for a very long time, has now has a draft.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
And, right. Millions and millions and millions of people who never thought they'd have to stake out a position on anything, who thought, mm-hmm. you know what, my rights, my body, my protection, things like Roe versus Wade are like gravity. No one's going to take that away from me, so I don't need to worry about it. Because that's just crazy talk. And it turned out, oh, no, those are all remnants of liberalism, of progressivism. Those are all things that Republicans have been working like termites for 50 years to undermine. And they've been trying and trying and trying and trying, getting closer and closer and closer. And even as they have closed in on your rights from all sides, even as they have effectively shut down access to women's health care in red states by making it impossible for abortion clinics to open, for family planning clinics to operate without, you know, under ludicrous conditions. Now they're coming straight after you. And I really do hope people, say, under the age of 30, wake the fuck up. I mean, I know they are. I know there's a lot of people in you know, junior dudes age and younger and older who are on board and understand and activate. And I get that. And I appreciate that. But there are a whole lot of people out there who've taken all of this for granted. Mm-hmm. This was their birthright, that nothing would ever change it. You know, it's the earth on which I stand. Nothing's going to mess it up. And there's now that burning smell that's getting closer is your world being burned down by Republicans who have been very clear that this is where they were going all along. And now you've got to pick a side. Now you have to stand for something. Now you can't just shrug and hope some other person takes your burden for you. This is on you. Your job now is to get your ass out of your chair and go out and get Democrats elected. That's your job now. And your job is to talk to your friends who think this will never happen to them, slap the controller out of their hand, turn off Red Dead Redemption, and tell them, no, the revolution is here, motherfucker. It's here now. It's not 10 years from now or 20 years from now. It's here now. It's knocking on your door, and your job is to get off your ass and go fight. And then you got to organize and do all the hard stuff. But first you got to figure out, oh, it's here. War is here. It's here now. And it's going to be, and you're drafted into it now. Didn't want to be part of it. Neither did I, frankly.
Yeah.
I had no
intention. That's right. That's right.
You and I had no intention of continuing this podcast in this manner, past the, election of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
It just, you know, we were going to do other things and this, we're going to continue to have this, but this was not going to, this was not part of the plan.
So what is our job, Driftglass? What is our job now?
Oh, honey. Well, mine is to make sure Malcolm Nance knows what I think at all times. And,
oh, because he replied to your tweet this afternoon. Good for him.
He did. No, I'm for relaxation. You know, I read hard-boiled crime novels and essays by Jimmy Breslin.
Yeah.
No, I'm cruising my way through a tiny typed version of a book of columns by Jimmy Breslin, who's a great New York columnist and of renowned workaholic and just an all around fascinating guy. But he really did believe that his job was to stick up for the people who could stick up for themselves.
Right.
To walk among them, to sit on the park bench and talk to the black kids. And he always felt more at home there than any place else, riding the subway more than any place else. And really get out there and dig and dig and dig for the story. He was the journalist who really felt his job was to advocate on the part of the have-nots. And by doing so, embarrass the people who actually can make changes to society into making those changes. He took credit, I believe, for getting the Concorde not to land in a New York airport because it was going to ruin the residents' hearing. Mm-hmm. People mm-hmm. lived around the airport. But that really is our job, as we have defined it, because, you know, we don't work for nobody. You know, Comcast doesn't write us any checks, neither does Soros. But mm-hmm. our job, as we've defined it, is to contextualize for people who are living through this nightmare what you are seeing, why things are the way they are, and maybe what you can do about it. And help, because I have no legislative power. I have no authority. I can't blow in a call to Rodney Davis and make him come on this show and answer tough questions. I can't cross-examine people in Congress. But there are people who can do that. And they need to be made to feel that they should be obliged to listen to us, to the left, to liberals, to people who have genuine concerns and are terrified about where this country is headed. And that's what we can do. We can help people understand the world that they're living in. We can give them some context for the politics they see around them and some history, some past, because that's our superpower, remembering the past. And then create a context in which people in power feel that they really, really should do something about this. Where sitting on your hands and saying, well, you know, once the fever breaks, we'll all get back to bipartisan normalcy. We're saying shit like that on the campaign trail. We'll get you laughed off the stage.
Right. I was a little bit depressed this week by, of all people, Steve Kornacki.
Really?
Because Steve Kornacki was showing polling numbers on Democratic candidates.
Because Steve, he irritates me, but he doesn't depress me.
So. No, he usually doesn't depress me either. But the way that he framed the polling numbers depressed me initially. And then I thought about it and I wasn't so depressed. So I thought I would talk about this a little bit. Mm-hmm. Steve Kornacki put Democratic voters into three categories: liberals, moderates, and conservative Democrats. And he noted that Elizabeth Warren has had a kind of a pulse to her support. And he separated out the three: liberals, moderates, and conservative Democrats. And he said, now, among liberal Democrats, Elizabeth Warren, 30%. She has the majority of people who identify as liberals are supporting her. And but the real reason that the overall number is so high for Joe Biden is it sees moderates and conservative Democrats are really all in for Biden. Mm-hmm. And I started to get just really down, like, wow, what he's saying is that liberal Democrats are not the majority within the Democratic Party.
Right.
And I said, really? Wait, is that true? What? Is that even possible? You know, am I really living in this kind of bubble where I think that the way I think as a Democrat is the majority, and it's not true. Mm-hmm. And I really thought about it and realized that if you're a Democrat and you call yourself a liberal at the same time, mm-hmm. you are like me. You eat, sleep, and breathe
right.
what is happening in our politics.
Right. It affects you.
Saying you're a liberal, you're committed to Democratic politics. You're committed to the values that all of us share in terms of how government can solve problems.
Yeah, you understand things and you follow things. Yeah. Yes.
Right. And you pay attention. And if you call yourself, well, yeah, I usually vote Democratic, but I'm a moderate.
Right.
Then that is an admission mm-hmm. that you don't pay attention to politics.
Right.
And that you are just going by name recognition.
Yeah.
And that you're not really listening to the issues yet. And until it's on television, something that's big in the news today is how do voters pay attention to anything? It's only if it's on television.
Right.
Is it real?
Yeah.
And so when there's a debate and there's actually candidates to look at on a show,
right.
then people will start to make a decision and pay attention. So the fact that, of course, Steve Kornacki divided up Democrats and then said, well, and the reason Joe Biden, because we have to talk about Joe Biden and we have to talk about Joe Biden, is this big, huge number, is it's these massive number of conservative and moderate Democrats who are not thinking at all about who they're going to support, really, mm-hmm. but recognize Joe Biden's name and therefore are in a zero consequence being asked a question on a poll, say, yes, I'm for Biden. I did hear Chris Coons, Senator Chris Coons, talk this week about Biden. Apparently he's a Biden supporter, and say that one of the reasons to support Joe Biden is that of all the people who are running, he is the one who can reset the world stage to be pro-United States policy again. Mm-hmm. I think any Democrat can do that. I understand that Joe Biden knows a lot of world leaders personally, and I'm sure that's of value. I personally think Joe Biden should go and run the Democratic National Committee if he still wants a job. I also think that the support among liberals for Elizabeth Warren is policy-based, not personality-based, and that we are wanting to support any candidate who will sign on to that agenda. That whoever can beat Trump and sign on to a progressive agenda is the candidate for me. I don't know how you feel, but...
Well, first of all, you should just not watch Steve Kornacki.
Okay.
Steve Kornacki has one useful tool in the tool belt. The night of the election, Steve Kornacki is the guy you take out of deep freeze, and he rolls up his sleeves and he gets on his board and he starts writing like mad. But really the only thing he does is read numbers at you. And that's great. Somebody needs to know that. But he serves no purpose other than that. I would not put a lot of stock in people who we believe can take on someone on a stage. Now, who do we want up there punching? Because in my humble opinion, Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump every time they were on stage. What does it mean to beat Donald Trump? Well, it can't be to convince Republican voters to rethink their vote. If they're going to do it, they're going to do it. That's fine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you're still a Republican in 2019, you're just, as I've said, you're just a reprogrammable meatbag.
Well, but Driftglass, here's the deal. I think, and this is self-selecting, but I think there are people turning around. And those people are showing up to Elizabeth Warren rallies or Elizabeth Warren town halls or meetups or whatever you want to call it. But she is traveling through Appalachia and being very bold in her decision to attend to places that aren't getting any attention during the election process.
But here's the thing. She's not going after Republican voters. She's going after poor voters and outcast voters. And I say totally do that.
But they may have voted for Trump in 2016.
But she's not calibrating her message to appeal to Trump voters.
No, she's not.
She's calibrating her message to say, you have a problem with opioid addiction. I have a plan to help you with that. And here is my plan. I understand what you're going through. I understand the unfairness and the burdens that have been piled on you by three generations of poverty. Let me help you fix that.
And she's running a populist FDR style campaign that works in those districts. It really does.
So if you're calibrating your campaign to get back Trump voters, to appeal to what you think Trump voters are, you're going to fail. If you're calibrating it to go after problems, real endemic, deep systemic problems in our country, and you're going to where people live and talking to them, you're going to be encountering a whole bunch of Trump voters if you do that. No doubt about that. But that's not why you're doing it. You're doing it because there's a problem and you have a solution, or think you have a solution, and you'd like to talk to people who are affected by the problem and tell them what you think you can do for them.
Mm-hmm.
Basic politics. And she's doing basic politics very, very well.
Yes, she is.
So,
yes,
but creating a sort of a master plan for your campaign about, we're going to get back 2 million voters from the right. Don't do it. And register the hell out of African-Americans everywhere you can. Register the hell out of first-generation American immigrants everywhere you can. Go after people that are the natural Democratic constituents who, for whatever reason, found it unpleasant or not worth their time to come out during 2016, and get them back in the game. And you don't need to go lecture them. You can just say, look, this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what happened. Mm-hmm. You stay on the bench. You decided not to vote. A couple hundred thousand votes, 120,000 votes across 3-4 states. Boom. We're fucked. Okay. Let's make sure that doesn't happen this time. All I'm asking is for an hour of your time on election day to go out and make sure this never, ever happens again.
Yeah.
And once we get a Democrat in the White House, Democratic Senate, Democratic House, we will figure out everything else. But right now, getting our government out of the hands of lunatics and bigots and climate change deniers and scumbags and criminals is the number one priority. And I had planned for that. So,
well, and I think as much as we want to not have necessarily a white man at the head of the ticket, because that is part of what's going mm-hmm. on Twitter and so forth.
Speaking as a white man, I do not want a white man at the head of my ticket.
Yeah. There you go. I think Hillary Clinton made a big mistake having an all white ticket.
Yeah, I do too.
Particularly after Obama brought out African-American voters in large yep. numbers to vote for him as representative of them. And he never forgot mm-hmm. that. The times at which a Democratic candidate for president can have an all white ticket, I hope, are over.
Well, you showed me the video of Barack Obama visiting a group of kids playing ball.
Right. Yesterday, Thursday. Yeah.
Just tearing across the field and excited and thrilled and, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Can you imagine Mitch McConnell, Donald Trump, Mike Pence, inspiring that kind of spontaneous joy?
I can't imagine Hillary Clinton inspiring that spontaneous joy. And I'm not being critical of her at all.
That's why you have a vice presidential slot.
Right.
And you put in there someone who will inspire people like that.
Right.
Because if you can't do it yourself, if you can't throw out the opening pitch, that's fine. But you got to put someone in there who can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I, again, speaking for all white straight men everywhere, it's time for the reign of my people to be over.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason this doesn't bother me is I want this to be a contest of ideas. And I want the best ideas to win. And I want the best candidates to win. So it doesn't bother me if the next 12 presidents don't look like me
right.
at all.
Right.
What bothers me is if the idea of my democracy, the fundamental theory of my democracy, is destroyed by people insisting that the only people who are allowed to sit at the big table and make the big decisions are straight white Republican asshole men.
They did with healthcare when they tried to come up with Trump care and the entire committee that was coming up with Trump care was white Republican men?
We're going to have a replacement in a couple of weeks. A couple of weeks could be great. It'll cost you a nickel. You'll be covered for generations. It's going to be awesome. It costs nothing. It'll be great. Obamacare gone. It's dead. It's over. And the people who can sit through that and nod their heads are people who you have to start treating as citizens of a foreign country.
Mm-hmm.
Who can fuck your country up, mind you.
Yeah.
But you have to stop trying to pretend that those people can be reached. And again, that's a scary thing. That's a scary thing for if you run a media corporation and you're sitting there going, you know, ad revenues are down, laying people off, things are looking tight. You know, if you're running a media corporation, you probably made a shitload of money and you never reinvested it in people or equipment. So this is pretty much on you. But, you know, you're looking at pissing off the least number of people as your business plan. And you do that by, you know, by weather and sports,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's how you do it. And obituaries and car crashes. You certainly don't do it by announcing to the world that a third of this country is out of their fucking minds and needs to be in 5-point restraints. And the guy who ran the country is a monster. And the people who voted for him are fools and racists and assholes and have contempt for democracy. That's not how you sell dick pills and reverse mortgages.
Right, right.
So that's not a conversation that we're ever going to rely on our national media to hold for us. However, there is an intersection point that I think is falling down on the job a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to call out by name Pod Save America. Not to say anything bad about them. I'm not going to slander or slight them.
Well, and this is not even a family fight. This is a
no.
We've had this conversation pre-podcast in our pre-podcast prep session,
which we call our life, you know, which we call talking over lunch. So basically, this is the microphone, you know, at brunch.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is not calling them out. This is not calling them names. This is really specifically. There are people on the internet. There are people who work for Vox. There's people who work for
PodSave America. Not Fox. Vox.
V-O-X.
Right.
Vox. And people who work for PodSave America, which are both massive media platforms. They're not, you know, global yet, but they're huge. They're relative to us. They're gigantic.
And I would add MSNBC to this. Of the MSNBC hosts to this.
I would agree.
Questioning and exercise in your TED Talk.
Right.
Right.
So I have my little button mic on, and I have my earphone in, and pretend I'm talking to thousands of people about this subject. And there's a large PowerPoint going on behind me. And I'm reading from the second mountain, and the audience is getting up and leaving. You know, I'm reading like Mort Saul read the Kennedy report on stage. Right. I'm reading it and just ripping it to pieces. But before we do that, I'd like to talk about the fact that people who are activists, who have a very specific political position, which I largely agree with, and who have an enormous clout heavy media platform, like these folks do, cannot sit on Twitter and complain that why aren't the Democrats doing thus and so? Mm-hmm. Why aren't Democratic leaderships doing X, Y, and Z? Why won't anyone tell these Democratic leaders, I agree with that critique. Here's the thing. You and I have a little podcast in the middle of middle America. I could not get Rodney Davis on the phone to save my life.
And he's your congressman.
And he's my congressman.
He won't do town halls. He's just terrible.
I could not get Dick Durbin to sit. I might get him to sit for 2 minutes just to talk about the weather. But he lives, you know, a mile from my house.
Yeah.
You see him at the store. So it's not physically impossible for me to get next to him and ask him a question or two. But this is, if you have Barack Obama on your speed dial, you do not get to get away with asking the rhetorical question, gee, I wonder why Democratic leaders aren't impeaching faster. I wonder what the plan is here. I wonder why they won't take action. Hey, guess what? You have all these people on your Rolodex. Why don't you call them and find out?
Well, and if also, Driftglass, I'm going to say this because I think this is – and I'm sorry to say this, Driftglass. I really think this is a bro problem.
I agree.
And the reason I say that, not calling you one of the bros, but Nancy Pelosi has explained it to you. She has explained it to all of us, which is that impeachment is a tremendously gut-wrenching thing for the nation to go through. And if we're going to go through it, we're going to do it methodically and bringing along even Republican voters to the point where we have a 9-0 Supreme Court ruling behind us. And a steady investigation and inquiry into impeachment. I mean, we have now jumped off of that cliff. Let's face it. I mean, we are now at the point where we are going to have an impeachment inquiry. And that, I mean, we're there with McGahn not showing up. We're there. So, and that was why Nancy Pelosi had a meeting with her caucus right before they're going on a 10-day vacation. Or a 10-day trip home or whatever they want to call it. Mm-hmm. That is why she came out from that and used the term cover up.
Yes.
No one's above the law, that Trump's engaged in a cover up. Speaking for the liberals in her caucus, they won. They won the argument. And they won the argument that we're going to take this methodically, but we know where we're going. Right. And we're going with investigating this president forever until he's out of office. So, but she said that impeachment is a gut-wrenching thing to do to a country.
Yes, it is. I understand. And believe me.
Therefore, it has to be done carefully because we don't want a civil war. Right. Over this.
Well,
and that is, I'm terrified. I want you to know, I'm terrified. When I see Trump's at his Pennsylvania rally this week with all those red hats behind him and they're chanting, lock them up.
He's talking about us.
And they're willing to put James Comey, former FBI director, on trial for treason against Trump.
Which is
execute him.
Well, that's the thing. They're willing to jail and execute their political enemies.
Right.
And so, but here's the counter argument. We are in a civil war. They're just rolling over
us. It's just not a shooting war.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but they're just rolling over us because no one has figured out how to push back hard enough and loud enough and scary enough to put an end to it.
In large part, that is because the D.C. press corps and particularly the White House press corps, yes, is being used as a prop by this president. I was grateful that Lawrence O'Donnell mentioned that this week at least once.
I agree.
The White House press corps is used as a prop by this president to maintain that he is, you know, that everyone there agrees with him.
Dave Roberts, mm-hmm, Dr. Vox over at Vox Media, who's a good writer and I enjoy reading him, mm-hmm, was saying this morning that he's been saying for years, as we all have, that Trump and the GOP are just going to keep going down this road until they're forced to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Forced to stop by an equal or greater counterpower, he said specifically. Principles and persuasion play no role in any of this.
Hmm.
There'll be no restraint, no outbreak of decency, no trampled rule or norm that's too far. Democrats will stop them or they won't be stopped.
Hmm.
And he said, I hope behind all the dithering and hand-wringing and performative naivete, Dem leaders understand this.
Hmm.
And my answer was, if only there were some means by which people with the clout of a very large media platform behind them could, you know, ask Democratic leaders that very question, get an answer, and then share that answer with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then hashtag journalism, how does it work?
Mm-hmm.
This is what you have. Once you have the power to hold people accountable, to ask people questions, because the whole idea of journalism is that you get to be in the room where I don't get to be. You're there as an investigator, as a proxy for me, the audience, the people, the common folks, the people that Jimmy Breslin was looking out for.
But that's so naive.
Because
because that's not why they're there. They're
of course,
there to sell dick pills. Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
But yeah, you're crossing the wires here.
Yeah.
That is why Chuck Todd is there.
Yeah.
But if you have created an activist journalism platform like Vox Media, like Crooked Media, here's Brian Butler of Crooked Media, who I also read and also like. His article today, the Democratic approach to checking President Trump is failing, and it has yet to dawn on anyone who has the power to change course. That Democrats don't appear to understand how bad things are. I asked them the same question. If only there were some means by which people like you could ask them questions and maybe get an answer and share it with the rest of us. If you are Chuck Todd and you are beholden to Comcast, you are never, ever, ever going to ask anyone these questions because you're terrified of losing your dick pills and your reverse mortgages. I get that. If you are a little tiny blog or a podcast like us, you don't have the firepower to do this. But if you have created for yourself a media platform that reaches millions of people every week and your stated goal is activism and getting answers to questions like these because they are so important, you cannot then turn around and shrug and say, I wish someone else would do the hard work of finding out what the hell the Democratic leadership is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it. You can't wash your hands. You wanted this job. You built a media platform to give you the authority to get this sort of answers to these sorts of questions answered. You've had Chuck Todd on your show. You've had hundreds of candidates on your show. And that's great. But if you are terrified that the people in charge are letting this slide and would really like to know, like the rest of us would, what are you planning to do to stop this authoritarian from rolling tanks in the streets?
Right.
Then you at least have the responsibility that goes with the authority, the power you have. With great power comes great responsibility. I'm sure I've heard that somewhere, probably in a Marvel movie. And now you have great power. And now you have people on speed dial that I don't have. I have no access to them, but you do. So the people who are dithering are both them and you. Call them up. Ask them. Ask Steny Hoyer. If he doesn't want to give you an answer, tell me he doesn't want to answer that question. But if you're acting as a proxy for me because Chuck Todd has failed us, which he most definitely has, and if you're an activist who would like to get Democrats fired up about winning this fall, and Democrats are currently really worried that their leadership is not getting the fucking message that this is very, very, very bad, that Donald Trump has turned his AG loose today. This happened mm-hmm. today, given right. his AG the clearance to take all the intelligence from all of the sources that we have in this country, declassify them at will, and use them to punish his political enemies, which is something that no president has ever done before
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
has burned our bridges with every intelligence agency around the world. I would really like to know what the plan is because I'm on your team. And if you're not telling me on your team what your plan is, I'm deeply involved in this. I'm deeply active in this. And if I don't know what the fuck you're thinking, then the average person doesn't follow politics that closely, or as a Democrat and would really like to figure this shit out, who isn't quite as nerdy as I am. If none of us can figure out what the plan is, how do we have any confidence that we're being led in the right direction? That there is a plan, mm-hmm. that we're going someplace. Because honestly, and this does not apply to Nancy Pelosi, bless her heart, this doesn't apply to Steny Hoyer, but the reason we are in this mess, one very big reason we're in this mess, is that people in the media, and I'm speaking to you, David Brooks, wherever you are today, but David Brooks and David Frum and Michael Gerson and Brett Stevens and all the rest of them, all the people in the media, all the conservatives in the media, all the people that have enabled them and call them their friends, Mark Shields, who's sitting across from David Brooks for the last 20 years, have all said, you can trust me. Mm-hmm. I have insider information about the whole Magilla. And don't worry, Marco Rubio is definitely going to be the nominee. Mm-hmm. Don't worry, the Republican Party's fine. Yeah, we had this little crazy thing with Sarah Palin, and it was a little scary there. But fuck that. That was a glitch. You don't need to worry about a goddamn thing. Everything's fine. And the reason I know everything's fine is I have all this insider information because I'm a journalist with the New York Times, and mm-hmm. people answer my phone calls. Hell, I've been to brunch with Barack Obama more time than you've been to lunch with your wife in the last year. Yeah. So I have the insider track. I have the skinny. I can't give you names. I can't tell you specifically what Lindsey Graham, what kind of underwear he wears, but I know. I've seen him in the shower. So I have that level of intimate insider knowledge about what's going on in Washington, and you can trust me. Everything's fine. And you know what? Everything wasn't fine. Yep. The people who got paid a shit ton of money to tell us what was going on lied to us over and over and over again. And the people who went broke out here in the cornfield sounding the alarms and setting their hair on fire were right all along. So I'm tired of taking people's word for what's really going on in mm-hmm. the corridors of power. I want to know. I want to know to a fare thee well. Because I don't want to end up after the election going, huh, I guess John Kerry lost. Well, that's weird. I thought he was going to win. I thought winning debates is how you win elections. I want to know what the plan is now. And if the plan is we're going to wait till 2020, mm-hmm. then that's what we'll do. If the plan is we're going to impeach but not remove because Mitch McConnell's in the Senate, because if you're going to impeach Donald Trump, you're not impeaching Donald Trump. You're impeaching the Republican Party.
Yep.
High fucking time for people with a media platform and political clout to come together to put the entire Republican Party on trial. And that's where I stand on that.
Yep. I agree. And that's what, I mean, we are doing that on our little podcast.
Yeah, we are. And I don't believe that anyone at these large podcasts or large places are operating in bad faith.
Right.
They are not understanding that you can't straddle that fence. You can't complain about, you know, the dishes not getting when you actually own a dishwasher and have detergent.
Well, that's where the TED Talk question comes in, which is the question between activism and journalism, and how do you balance needing access to people with power that you can't just shit on because they'll just cut off access to you. And that's part of your job. And the activism part of it, which is outside shouting into those levels of power to do their jobs. Mm-hmm. And it is, you said it's intersectionality. And I said, no, it's a teeter-totter. And you always give up one side to give weight to the other. And it's very difficult. And so I'm, you know, praying for people like Chris Hayes every week because he really remembers the Iraq War and he remembers how we got into it in granular detail.
He does.
And sees it happening again. You know, there are mm-hmm. troops going to Iran, to that part of the world where Jared is in charge of peace. You know, this is the thing.
We're going to bypass Congress, apparently.
To sell the Saudis weapons. Yes. Right. To bomb children and schools. Yes. So I don't want to leave people with a sense of hopelessness because I think our rage is working. The Washington Post published an article with a title in it this week about Elizabeth Warren earning money. as a lawyer.
I know.
And they were flat. Oh,
ratio to
death. They were flat.
They were.
Because we have learned, we women have learned, that we have to come at you with knives out with that kind of sexist bullshit.
How bad was it? It was so bad Maggie Haberman had to stand up and try to defend it.
She retweeted it. And so
she got
flattened.
Yeah. She did.
And many people wrote articles, including me, about, you know, what the hell, Washington Post? What is wrong with you that you're doing this again? You know, and I think we are all really at a heightened state of anger right now.
Right.
That isn't healthy for us. You know,
no.
I need to get outside this weekend and have a cookout and
burn some burgers.
Burn some meat. No, our vegan daughter will want us to have vegan burgers. So that's okay.
We will. Because you know what? We accommodate everyone here. We make sure everyone has what they want at our house.
20-year-old boy is home and he's going to want burgers. There is an election coming up that does consume a lot of our bandwidth.
Yes.
It should consume a lot of the Democratic Party's bandwidth. But at the same time, when we're paying attention to all of the things that are going on with it's not even creeping nationalism and creeping authoritarianism anymore.
No, it's here.
It's here.
It's here. And it's real. And, you know, we can't let the political climate raise go up even one more degree.
Yeah, right.
Because all will be lost.
That's it. Mm-hmm. We have one time for one more item before we go to our news roundup. And I did want you to talk a little bit about Rahm Emanuel.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, once upon a time, way in the back of the day. I think I mentioned this before. I used to work with Jill Winebanks.
Yes. Yes.
In Chicago.
In Chicago.
Back when she was in education and I was doing my thing. And I didn't know any of this about her. And you know, we had a very cordial relationship. I don't know if she'd remember me. If you describe me physically to her, she might go, oh, yeah, he made my life a little difficult on a couple of things. Because I had certain things I wanted, and she had certain agendas she had to meet, and we eventually found ways to work together. But, I was very deeply enmeshed in the in Chicago politics, because it's a grand sweeping opera that has been going on for a century. and this week, Chicago swore in Lori Lightfoot as either the 56th or 47th mayor, depending on how you count. And Lori Lightfoot is African-American and a woman and a lesbian. And I'm terribly excited about what she's going to do in Chicago because it is. I was there for the Harold Washington days. And those were heady times, my friend. The world seemed open in ways that it had never been before. And Rahm Emanuel, good old Ramses, got himself a new job. He is now a contributing editor at The Atlantic magazine.
But here's Rahm Emanuel, who basically failed mayorship.
Yeah.
Goes into history books, and he lands on his feet at The Atlantic.
Of course he does. And his first article is we have to take on those damn elites, which I think is just perfect. Just perfect. And bring your memory and experience with you wherever you go.
Yeah.
Don't let it weigh you down. Don't let it drown you. But don't let people get away with saying, like this week, if you just let us get away with this shit, then we'll negotiate on infrastructure.
Right.
If you just stop investigating us, if you just, you know, do not negotiate with hostage takers. And Republicans are fucking hostage takers. And they always have been. It is not impossible to get out of this situation, but you cannot give them any more running room. You can't let them say, you can't let people lead your party who say we're going to compromise and negotiate our way out of this, because we're not. We're going to win and we're going to take power from them. But every single time we have let them off the hook, they have gone to ground for 6 months to a year and come back twice as strong, twice as angry, twice as well funded, highly focused, and completely amoral, completely willing to trash anyone, anywhere. You know, the idea that a doctored videotape has been pushed around the internet by Donald Trump. Well, what do you think happened to Barack Obama? Yeah. How do you think Acorn was defunded? You know, this is not new. This is who they are. and they're never going to change.
It's what happened to John Kerry. Absolutely. The big lie. It's swift. That's why we call it swift voting. I want to just switch gears one more time.
Sure.
And wow. Talk about Congressman Jared Huffman, who is my new hero. Jared Huffman is on a committee called WOW, which is Water, Oceans, and Wildlife.
Wow. Okay. One second.
Yeah.
WOW used to stand for Workforce on Wheels.
Ah. Well, it can stand for lots of things. But
acronyms are, you know.
At church, it stands for Welcome Our Worshippers.
Yeah. So everyone.
Everyone. So Jared Huffman is chairman of this subcommittee. And again, elections matter, representation matters, because Jared Huffman is a Democrat from California, too, and a progressive on climate change and the environment. This is clearly a passion for him. He has a subcommittee hearing on this new report that came out this month on extinction and how many species are ready to be extinct any moment due to climate change. This report came out from a group that represents 132 United Nations member countries.
Uh-huh.
These scientists have been working on this for a long time. And this report that came out is urgent. It is important. And it is it's based in science.
There was reading and math involved.
And so the Democrats on the subcommittee had on the panel to ask and get policy advice from three of the scientists who work for this 132 United Nations member state organization that put out this report. The Republicans invited two climate deniers, one of whom worked for James Inhofe in his career and has been on InfoWars several times.
Yeah.
And the other one has a YouTube channel where he denies climate change and says, he said to the committee, you know, CO2 levels are actually good for endangered species, increased CO2 levels. I mean, just jarring.
These are the authorities that your crazy Uncle Liberty leans on.
And they're all sitting at one table, right? They're all sitting at one table as if they're equal. Okay. And so Jared Huffman was my hero because he called them junior varsity level climate science denying think tanks. He said something to the effect of, I don't know how one selects the career of being a contrarian on YouTube for money. Mm-hmm. But he focused on the Republicans on the committee and the fact that they are very smart. It's about the refs. You know, if you think that Republicans are finally coming around on climate change, be aware of the kind of people they invited to this hearing. And my Republican friends invited two people, one of whom is InfoWars. We invited three scientists who wrote the report from the United Nations member states organization.
Yep.
And so, he knew to say to the scientists who were there, I mean, he didn't apologize. He just said, you guys have heard all this climate science denial BS before. I want to give you ample opportunity to clear the record on this and say what is really true. But it's not as if you haven't heard this. The problem is the Republicans on the committee invited these nonsense YouTubers to come on and be on a panel with you. That's the problem. Yeah. It is because Republicans invited them to be here that we are at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So Jared Huffman, kudos to you.
Hero of the week.
And he would not be in the position to do that had we not won the midterms.
And Lori Lightfoot, I'll put that out to Lori Lightfoot too. I want to put her up as a hero of the week.
Yep.
Chicago mayor.
Elections make a difference. I do understand why Nancy Pelosi is focused on 2020. Yeah. We can't do anything if we don't have a new president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that really is important. To elect the right president. And I'm I was just thinking when you said Jill Winebanks about where we were in 1970, you know, in 1968.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, Joe Biden mentions that a lot. He's like, you think things are bad now, but 1968 really was worse. You had Martin Luther King get shot, you had Bobby Kennedy get shot, and you had Nixon elected all in one year.
Right. That's right.
The world was coming to an end at that point.
And you know what happened the year after? 50 years ago, next month?
We landed on the moon. We
landed on the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes my species just amazes me. Just impresses the hell out of me. I go, you know what? Maybe, maybe it's worth us not going into the darkness. Maybe we're worth saving. But it's work, man. It is work.
It is work. And it is hard to dig out of the mental state. I mean, I've been in tears more than once this week, crying for children who are dying at the border, upset about what Trump is doing, feeling like I'm in the minority, feeling like I'm shouting into the void. And then I realize, oh, wait, there are millions of other people feeling just like me.
Yeah.
And we're all working in our own way to make a difference. And so focus on, and this was something Whoopi Goldberg said today on The View. She said, when I talked to people about AIDS and when I was an AIDS activist working with Congress to get things done, I didn't worry about which congressman I was talking to. I was worried about the people I was helping.
Right.
And the people I was speaking for.
Right.
And, you know, we have to think about that. We have to think about who are we trying to make their lives better?
Mm-hmm.
That's look back, don't look ahead to the people in power, the people with big media platforms. Think about all of the people that need help and then get up the next day and do it all over again. Hey, each week we post to our Facebook page and website that Internet Kitties sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitties are our own Brock and Olive. We're calling them Brolive, but it's the boys at our house in honor of Brexit because their butts are together in this picture. So cute.
In honor of Brexit.
And of course, Brock and Olive and Zeppo and all the cats in our house prefer freshly poured cat food. Whether you buy pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cat will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the cat food they eat is only freshly poured, our fake sponsor of this podcast. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. You can send your internet kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details, our PayPal, postal address, GoFundMe, Patreon, all of that information is there at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media, and thank you so much for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Oh, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties have canceled Infrastructure Week until those damn hippies turn that racket down.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2018, DGBG Productions Incorporated.